Podcast listeners, if your parents, what do you tell your children? If you make a mistake, you've got to own up to it. I made a mistake last week. I offered 26% off all shirts in the store. And then I pushed a button and nobody could get the shirts. Shipping was unavailable. So I apologize. And I lied because they won't let you get 26.52 off. They only let you get 27% off. So go to shop.letsrun.com today. Shop.letsrun.com today. Get your shirt for 27% off. You have to enter the code 2652 in honor of Grant Fisher's, I mean, Nico Young's 2652, and you'll save 27%.
Welcome to this week's episode of LetsRun.com Track Talk Podcast. We're back with another episode for you, and we're talking World Cross Country, folks. One of the best meets on the calendar. It's Saturday in Belgrade, Serbia. We'll have boots on the ground coverage and flying out on Wednesday. Can't wait for that. We'll break that race down. Who's the people to beat? How might the Americans do? What's the course going to be like? Why is it going to be almost 80 degrees Fahrenheit on Saturday? Big time showdown in the men's race. Joshua Cheptegei against Jacob Kiplimo, the last two champions. They're battling it out for the individual title. On the women's side, could we have a Kenyan sweep? Beatrice Jebet and Agnes Gedich. They are the top entrants following Sifan Hassan's withdrawal. Do a preview of World Cross. Plus, how high can American Wayne Kaladi finish? She's in the form of her life right now. Top 10, is that on the table? We'll see. Stateside, Nico Young has finally signed an NIL ahead of his most likely final collegiate season this spring. Simeon Birnbaum, the much-touted freshman, finally makes his official Oregon debut at Haywood Field. And we had an insane high school record go down in the boys' 4x100 meter relay in Texas. Lots to discuss. This is Jonathan Galt. I'm joined by Robert Johnson. Weldon Johnson will be joining us at some point. Robert Johnson might have to leave a little early. So combined, we've got at least one Johnson brother the whole time. But we're starting out me and Rojo. Robert, how are things?
Doing well. On a serious note, like, my heart goes out to anyone involved in this bridge collapse. Baltimore, I just can't imagine a worse way to go. You're working construction at like 1 a.m. trying to make ends for your family meet, and some ship hits the bridge and it collapses and you go into the water. If you're driving late at night, you have no idea that the bridge is just gone. You fly into the water. Jesus. Anyways, so I'm appreciating my life, John.
Glad you're here too, Robert. I know it's tragic. I mean, it sounds like they were able to get most of the car passengers off the bridge, but the people who are working on it, still six of them missing as we record this. So yeah, really sad to hear, and hope, you know, my thoughts are with the victims.
I'm a little jealous I'm not going to World Cross Country. That was my thing. I was the one that always went to World Cross Country. I think even before Jonathan Galt even existed on Let's Run. What year was it in China?
2015. So that I was working for you guys at that point, but I didn't go on the trip. That was a Rojo solo endeavor. But I always enjoyed your travelogue articles, Robert. I feel like I need to continue doing those. Like, just, yeah, what's it like to go to Serbia in March for a cross country race? Like, most people who go to letsrun.com are never going to go to Serbia. So what's it like there? And I remember reading 2009, still one of my favorite articles that's ever on the site, your trip to Jordan. You and Bobby Curtis are just driving, you get a cab from the airport together and just driving through Jordan, and then you did your trip to Petra. I always thought it was really entertaining, sort of a slice of life thing. So actually, I wanted to kick it off that way. You've been to a bunch of world cross countries through the years. Do you have a favorite memory or a favorite world cross that you've been to?
If I have to pick one, I'd definitely say the trip to Jordan. I mean, Petra is just so amazing. And then that was a wild experience. Just landing, kind of being afraid, to be honest. thinking, I shouldn't admit this, but are we going to have our throat slit seeing Bobby Curtis?
Why would your throats be slit?
Don't want to get into the battle of the religions, John, but some religions only want there to be one religion on Earth. May not have been fair. I had a wonderful time there. I love China, too. My sassy interpreter, which says the Chinese are totally obedient. This young girl was amazing. I'm a little worried, John. You know, how are you going to do, like, away in the life? Because one thing that's holding you back on these trips is a lot of these great experiences have involved me partaking in the cigarette. And if you're a young person, I'm not going to lie, cigarettes are bad for you. But in much of the world, particularly apparently Jordan and Eastern Europe, smoking is still a thing. And if you want to get the local feel, you might, well, you're going to be covered in secondhand smoke anyway, so you might as well partake. Now, it's my understanding, John. Is it true you're a cigarette virgin? You've never had a cigarette in your mouth?
My cherry's intact. I've never had one. So,
good for you.
I do think, Robert, this is, no. You're talking out of your ass here, Robert. I went to Belgrade with you 2 years ago for World Indoors. And I remember we were looking for a place to have lunch on the final day in between the sessions. And all these restaurants were just filled with smokers. And I think you complained about it. I think you wanted a non-smoking section. And there was no non-smoking section. You certainly never smoked a cigarette next to me. So the idea that you're going to just get us to blend in by smoking a cigarette like the locals, you had your chance and you failed.
Full confession then. If I didn't have a cigarette with you, it may have been because I was afraid I'd be judged by the Northeastern liberal. And I know that there's been trips. Maybe it was Tokyo, whatever, where I bought cigarettes, secretly walked outside the hotel and smoked them. I think it was Tokyo during COVID, and then walked back in so you wouldn't know what I was doing. Because some of these places, you get them really cheap. I remember buying my friend a pack of cigarettes to take back with me. So this is kind of crazy. I actually am not condoning smoking. Like, it's very bad for you. I do think, though, if it wasn't bad for you, it's a great activity, particularly nowadays, because you have to do it in some obscure part of, like, outside your office. So you have to, I would assume, I like to talk to random strangers. So it gives me an excuse to talk to random strangers. So.
Well, Robert, now to be fair, you did peg me correctly. I would have judged you if you sat down and had a cigarette. So, you know, but I judge you for other things you do as well. And we still get along very well. And I enjoy going on these trips for you. So I don't think it's a big issue. But World Cross, I love this meet. This is my fourth. My first one was Uganda 2017, then Aarhus in 2019, and Bathurst, Australia last year. Really enjoyed all three trips. I think the best racing, I probably would say, I mean, every one of them's had like a dramatic moment. 2017, Joshua Cheptegei makes that bold bid in front of the home fans. The president of Uganda is there. He's trying to win the title, which would have been his first major title. And he just totally falls apart in the heat and humidity. Camworo runs him down. He ends up, you know, Cheptegei stumbles across the line. He was like 33rd or something. That was a crazy moment. 2019, the course itself was just wild. I love that. There was a beer tent at the top, the hardest cross-country course I've ever seen in my life. Jakob Ingebrigtsen, a young Jakob Ingebrigtsen. I mean, he's still young, but he was even younger then. I remember him running the race. He went out with the leaders in the junior race. And in the mix zone, he was just lying on the floor, exhausted afterwards. Like, I can't remember seeing him like that after a race. He was just done in by the course. And then last year in Bathurst, Letessa Mbagide, I was like, all right, she's clearly the class of the field. She looked to be waltzing to the title. And then about 150 meters from the finish line, she just starts tying up massively. Beatrice Chebet blows by her in the dying meters. Gide falls, and then her coach storms onto the course, picks her up, helps her across the finish line. She gets DQ'd for receiving assistance. Just one of the wildest moments in the history of that meet. So it's really a terrific championships. Does every single big star show up? No, but we usually get enough big names that it certainly means something to win. It's a really exciting race, really exciting meet to cover. I like that they move it around, that you get different conditions. You know, I was thinking the last one was in Bathurst. It was like in the 80s, really, you know, hot condition for the women's race. You know, there's cloud, a storm coming in for the men. I think Belgrade, March 30th in Belgrade, Serbia, it's probably going to be chilly, rainy, some mud. No, the high is 78 degrees on Saturday. So the lesson here for World Cross is you need to be prepared for anything. And that actually reminds me, Robert, of one of my least favorite memories of World Cross Country. It was Uganda in 2017. Now, do you remember what they told us when we got to Uganda about when it came to the drinking water, what the instructions were?
No, I do not.
You're only supposed to drink bottled water. Our sensitive Western guts can't handle the tap water in Uganda. So I was like, all right, I'll just stick to the bottled water. And I did that. And I get to the night before, we went to a nice restaurant, had a nice dinner. I ordered a salad. I'm like, I'm going to try to stay healthy. You know, I'll have a salad and then I'll have my main meal. And I go to sleep and I wake up in the middle of the night and my stomach is just revolting against me. And it's in so much pain and I have to go to the bathroom really bad. And I'm just like, what did I do to myself? How did this happen? I've only been drinking bottled water. Well, as you might have surmised, to prepare a salad, they wash the lettuce in the salad and they don't wash it with bottled water. They wash it with tap water. So that was my undoing. The lesson is when you're on these travels, you don't need to eat healthy. You need to eat smart. So I wasn't sure I was going to make it because this was the whole thing. I'd flown out to Uganda just for this race. And I'm sitting there, I'm waiting. I'm like, am I not going to be able to cover this race because, you know, I can't stop going to the bathroom because my stomach is just totally upset. My strategy was I'm just not going to eat anything for the rest of the day. Once it's through my system, there's nothing else to exit my system. Just go in there and I toughed it out. It was not fun, but it was memorable. So I'm going to be careful when it comes to the local delicacies in Serbia this weekend.
Thank you, John. That long-winded story reminded me I left the sprinkler on outside, all that talk of water. I had to go turn it off, but modern technology, no one realizes I was gone. But yeah, it's an amazing...
See, even if people were bored to death by my story of my stomach problems, it was a reminder for you to take care of your lawn. So there we go.
It's an amazing, man. I forgot. Actually, some of my experience... This would be like, if your kids were on spring break, like it's always kind of an obscure place you've never been. Take your kids to the meet. Go on a trip. Like we saw the gorillas in Uganda. I forgot about that. That was wild. I can't have a favorite. They're all my favorite. I'm jealous I'm not there.
But you know who will be there? Joshua Cheptegei, Jacob Kiplimo. The way I phrased it in my preview, Robert, this is the best 10,000 meter runner in the world and the best half marathoner in the world. And Jacob Kiplimo has had some injuries the last couple of years, so maybe he hasn't run that many half marathons, but he is the world record holder. I think that's a fair summation. These are two of the biggest stars in world distance running. I think they're going to go 1-2. I feel a little bit more confident in Jacob Kiplimo, but you've also got Berihu Aragawi, who was the world leader in the 5,000 meters last year, ran 12:40. Now, he hasn't medaled on the track. That's more because he's a grinder, doesn't have as big a kick, but that's not as big a problem at World Cross Country. So I think it's those three were your 1-2-3 last year in Bathurst. Kiplimo won it. Aragawi was second. Cheptegei third. Do you think that's your 1-2-3 again? And do you have a pick for the win?
So Aragawi's a grinder, but we're expecting Grant Fisher to grind his way to gold ahead of Aragawi, even though he can't beat Aragawi. Just a side note. I always refer to Aragawi as the guy that beat Grant Fisher. What, at the Olympics? Aragawi was fourth. Fisher was fifth. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And everyone's
so based on that one race, that's just the guy can run 12:40 and lead the world in the 5,000 meters, and he's still that guy who beat Grant Fisher a couple years ago in Tokyo.
Well, no, I just thought everyone assumed, in 4 years, Fisher, or 3 years, Fisher will be set. And I'm like, okay, but problem is someone who's younger than him, like Aragawi, might even be better too. So I guess that's probably who I think is, if you asked me to pick my top three, I would go with that three. I mean, I'm definitely picking Kiplimo for the win. He won last time. I've been wondering for a number of years, like, what if he ends up just being, remember, let's fast forward, you know, or fast forward, rewind 11 months ago and entering the track season, I was just like, is Caprimo going to just be totally dominant? Is he now just surpass, you know, like you had Gebre Selassie and then Bekele came on and Geb could never touch him. And then, you know, we had Cheptegei, he's a world record holder, but is Caprimo going to supplant him and take that title as best in not just the half marathon and cross country, but also in track? Because, you know, last year he wins world cross country in dominant fashion, then destroys a month later, destroys Cheptegei in the New York City half. Then he goes and opens up in the track and runs 12:41 in his first 5,000 of the year. So I admittedly, he didn't win that race. Imagine running 12:41 and losing.
I'm still not sure how he didn't win at the race. Remember that photo finish? It was against Kjelcher in Oslo. I still haven't seen photo proof that Kjelcher actually crossed that finish line first, but they were basically dead even. But yeah, you got a hamstring injury. He missed the world championships, so we didn't get to see him in Budapest, and he missed the world half as well, so we didn't see him in Riga. And then he's returned this winter, and he won the Ugandan trials. Granted, Cheptegei didn't run it, and he ran 26:48 in Valencia on January 14th. So I'm assuming he's in a bit better shape than he was in Valencia in January, which means, like, you know, 26 mids. I think that's going to be good enough to win this race, but there are other good guys on the field. But yeah, I am curious, Robert, if he can make that next step, because he's run well on the track, but not well enough to separate himself from these other guys like Kjelcher or Cheptegei, who is the king of the 10,000. You know, Kiplimo's got two bronzes, and Cheptegei has three golds. So Cheptegei is definitely a better track runner at this point. But Kiplimo is still officially only 23 years old. So, you know, he's probably going to be sticking around on the track a little bit longer, I would guess. Whereas Cheptegei said this is his last year before he goes up to the marathon.
You said officially 23 years of age, sort of dismissively, as if you were doubting it.
Well, here's the thing, Robert. I bring this up all the time. Officially, he was born on November 14th, 2000. Which means that when he was 15 years old, he ran 27:26 at the 2016 World Junior Championships in the 10,000 meters. Now, I will admit, Jacob Kiplimo is one of the greatest talents probably we've ever seen in the sport. He is a world record holder in the half marathon, 57:31. I just still struggle to think that a 15-year-old could run 27:26 pre-super shoes. Or am I wrong?
I'm not going to lie. It seems hard to fathom, but I think it's, and given like the known age cheating that used to go on in Africa with no birth dates.
I'm not even saying it's known age cheating. It's possible he didn't know his birth.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are two things as possible. Either he's the greatest phenom in the history of long distance running, which maybe it's true. Maybe he was that good at 15, or he was really 17, which is still a phenomenal performance, but also you can kind of believe it a bit more.
But you have to believe, it's like Kipchoge. You really think he was 18 when he was winning worlds? Well, if you don't, then that means he's like 41 and 42 and I'm running 201 now. So at some level, we have to accept it. To me, it's possible that they hit puberty a little bit earlier in Africa than in the U.S. for the men. So they would be more advanced. I don't know. There's kind of a different concept of childhood over there than here, but you know, whatever. I do think he's one of the greatest talents we've ever seen. And the only reason I said I was giving you a hard time is if you look at his picture, like his face, I think he's younger than Grant Fisher, definitely. So how old is Grant Fisher?
26. Yeah, we don't look. At this point, he's a senior athlete. Like, it doesn't really matter how old he is at this point. He's not competing in junior level anymore. He's a star. He's won World Cross. If he wins again, you know, that'll put him in elite company. It'll position him well for the Olympics, obviously. But Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of upset we didn't get a chance to see what he could do in Budapest last year, because he won. He didn't just win World Cross last year. He kicked everyone's ass. He won by 9 seconds, and most of that was just on the final loop where he took off and buried everyone, and ran a PB of 12:41 on the track. So he was in, I would say, the shape of his life, you know, in terms of track 10K fitness, and we didn't get to see that in Budapest. So I'm hoping he's fit right now. We'll see him in Belgrade, and I'm hoping that he's going to be fit for the Olympics in Paris. Now, my question to you about Cheptegei, he did get beaten pretty badly a couple weeks ago by Yomif Kejelcha in the 10K on the roads. I don't put that much stock in it because Kejelcha was going for the world record, where I think Cheptegei was just trying to get the Olympic standard, which he did. And the final result was Kejelcha wins in 26:37. Cheptegei second, 26:53. Are you of my mind that you're not that worried, or does it concern you that he got beaten so convincingly?
I'm not concerned, because I never had the impression that he was going all out in that race. But even if he was, okay, that's a good rust buster. Best workout is a race. So that's what I don't understand about this nonsense that Grant Fisher can't run this race. It would have worked perfectly. You qualify because it's not that hard to make. I think Grant Fisher would have qualified. And then you run the 10. And then the 10 sets you up perfectly for World Cross. This would be kind of like running the BU meet after NCAA Cross. It's the opposite. After running a track race, you go and run this. So I'm all for this meet having more sway on who gets to run the 10,000 at Worlds. But I really wish Fisher was there. I really wish Cooper Tier was there. But since they're not, I'm going to focus on some other people.
Well, there are other athletes who are doing this double from the 10. Wayne Colardi ran the 10. She's running World Cross. Anthony Rotich, who is the top American in the field, he ran the 10. Ran a personal best in that race, in fact. 27:08. Did he run 27:08? I'm getting that right. He actually ran, the guy is a steepler for most of his career, and now he goes out to the 10. That's how fast he ran. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, but he ran a great run, and now he's doing it. And then you have other people like Cheptegei. Grind, he's a bit better than everyone else. He ran a road race 2 weeks ago and is doing well cross. So I do think it is possible, but some people don't want it to throw off the training. They don't want to travel to Serbia from the West Coast. I don't know. Like, I can't get the explanations, but I also don't think it's impossible to run both, because obviously we've got a bunch of people doing it.
We should have had an emergency pod after Rotich ran that 27:08. Always been a big fan of his. For his 3 NCAA steeple titles, I think on this podcast predicted that he could...
You said it was possible he could medal in the 1500 meters at a global championship. Now, he was an NCAA mile champion, I will give him that. And recent NCAA mile champions have had a great track record at medaling. But I don't think that's really a realistic prediction.
Fountain of Youth at 33. But in your article, your men's preview, which is now up on the website, just published it before we started this podcast, you mentioned some other names that could win. So we've got the two Ugandans. You put in two Kenyans here. Ishmael Kipkurui, who was the junior champion last year. He's only 19. Just turned 19, actually, on February 10th. So
he could run the junior race this year. He's choosing not to. He's stepping up to the big boys.
Crazy. I mean, big talent. They actually put him on the world's team last year, even though he was fourth at the Kenyan trials. So I'm not sure exactly why. Maybe just because he's a big talent. Did they have four people in there? But 10th at Worlds in the, 13:05, 5,000 meter PB. Well, if you're 10th at Worlds, you're better than that, faster than that. So huge talent, obviously good at cross country if he won last year. But this year, his results aren't super impressive. Fourth in Elgabar, second in Eldoret, and then sixth at their trials. But, I definitely think, would it shock me if some huge talent, emerges? No. So I thought that was good. And then you're saying to downplay the chances of Nicholas Kipkerir, or Nicholas Camelli, whatever you want to call him, you know, fourth in the Olympics in the 5,000, obviously one of the top 5,000 guys in the world, 12:46 PB, but, you know, only eighth at the trials. But I put a poll up on the homepage. I put him in there just because track credentials.
Right. I mean, the Kenyan trials, sometimes the best guys will not go all out. They just do what they need to do to make the team. But eighth is not even making the team. Like, he's only on there because some other guys aren't going. So, and he also, you know, he wasn't all that great last year. He was the bronze medalist at the World Road Running Championships. But yeah, I guess he was up and down. Like, he won the Kenyan 10K trials, was eighth in the 10K in Budapest, didn't make the final in the 5K. But he did run 26:54 on the roads. He was 13th at World Cross. I just think, you know, I don't think he's, based on that, I just don't see him winning. The guy I was wondering if I was too harsh on was Sebastian Salwe, because he won the World Half last year. I mean, winning the World Half, objectively an impressive accomplishment, but I also think that field just wasn't as good as you would usually see in the World Half. Like, some of the best half marathoners were running the 5K, Gebrewet and Kajalcha, and he raced them a few weeks later in Valencia. Like, he ran 58:29, but he got smoked in that race. A bunch of guys broke 58 minutes in that race. He was 39 seconds behind fourth. So I think Sebastian Salwe is really good. He won the Kenyan trials. Can't be ignored. I just think Aragawi, Cheptegei, Kiplimo are just another level up on him.
I think there's good reason to think that, but we have the world. I mean, I'm certainly not discounting the guy who won the world half and just won the Kenyan trials in his only race of the year. So, and this is his, no, he was seventh last year. Is that right?
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the three Kenyans we have on our poll here. I'm wondering, John, so if the eighth place guy, which two aren't going, which of the top two from the Kenyan trials were kicked off the team? I've actually never heard of the Kenyan runner-up. Samuel Cheboi, if he's running or not. Well, I know Jeffrey Camor has won, so we need one other guy out. Jeffrey Camor, the two-time champion. Or is it three-time champion, John? He's getting ready for London. He's not running.
Two-time champion. The other one is Hilary Chepkwani, who was seventh. Rob, I'll admit, I'm not super familiar with some of these other guys either, but they do have a former world junior champion, Benson Kiplagat, who won the 5K, the 2021 World Juniors. So, you know, if you're on the Kenyan team, you're pretty good, but I think the Ugandans and Aragawi are the class of this field.
If you're looking for another name from Ethiopia besides Aragawi, Boki Dariba is the Budweiser long shot. Not really sure if it's fair to call this guy a long shot.
He won the Ethiopian trials, so I feel like that doesn't really qualify as long shot territory. But Robert, your guy Anthony Rotich just ran 27:08 for 10K. Was second at USA Cross behind Kubatia, who's not running here. What do you think is a good day for him? Where would you expect him to finish? I'm going to set the over-under at 25th place. Do you think Anthony Rotich is above or below 25th?
I think he's better than that. 27:08. You're going to have six Kenyans, six Ethiopians, and then who I think are capable of that, maybe three or four Ugandans. That's put me to the back end of the teens for me. I'm hoping he's top 20. And that would be a good showing for the U.S. I mean, John has it here on the chart. Here's the top U.S. male finisher at World Cross Country. You know, going back, Bathurst, Sam Chilenga, 21st. 2019, Chadrick Kipchoge, 34th. Uganda, Sam Chilenga was 11th. Giyang, China, Chris Derrick, 24th. So, go to Bijias, the miracle on dirt. Ben True was 6th.
Three-time Epps cross-country champion, Ben True, of Dartmouth College, 6th place.
So, if you look at the thing, and this is in the article, Of the last 8 world cross country titles, the Americans have only finished in the top 20 on 2 occasions. Sam Chilenga was 11th in 2017. Ben True was 6th in 2013. And actually, it's stunning to me that most of the time, we're not even in the top 30. 33, 34, 34. Well, I guess that's 3 of the 8 ties. Well, like 1, 2, 3. Now, 4 of the last 8 times, top American has failed to crack the top 30. But back to this Ethiopian guy, their champ. You know, he did well in the 5,000. I'm trying to find his time, John. I cannot find it.
It has a 5,000 1406, according to World Athletics.
1406?
That's what it says.
Well, that's hard to believe. He must have a different spelling because I can't find him until it stops here, but he has a 1406 PB, but he got bronze in the under 20 race last year. So I guess I got confused about the track. I was thinking he got bronze in the...
Well, it also says he's run 27.30 for 10,000. So, I mean, obviously, 1406, it's a hand time at altitude from a couple of years ago. Like, I'm sure he's a low 13s guy, probably maybe sub 13 if you're winning the Ethiopian trials. What he's capable of, you know?
At age 19. But it is interesting. I put a poll up in the article, put it up on the homepage. You know, people have only been able to vote for about 30 minutes. But as we speak right now, Kiplimo getting 2/3 of the first place vote, 66%. Cheptegei getting 24%. Aregawi getting 9. And there must be some rounding because that adds up to 99 and nobody else has any other votes.
Makes sense to me. All right, let's go to the women's race. Unlike the men, I think this is all Kenya. They've got a very strong team. Beatrice Chebet, who ran 14.05 last year at the pre-classic, who was the bronze medalist at the Worlds in the 5,000. She won the World Road Running Champs. She won World Cross last year in Australia. She's running. She didn't win the Kenyan Trials. In fact, I think she was only 4th, but she's on the team. I think I have a slight underdog, Robert, because Agnes Ngedich, the woman who was 3rd last year in Bathurst and who had probably the most unbelievable performance of 2023 so far, sorry, of 2024, when she ran 28.46 for 10K on the roads in Valencia on January 14th. She's also in this race. She won the Kenyan Trials. She's really coming into her own. I think she has to be favored over Beatrice Chebet. Do you agree?
Yes. I mean, to me, this is... we may be seeing... I don't even know what to compare it to. We've never seen anything like this. 28.46 on the roads? I mean, admittedly, I did think a sub-29 was possible on the track, but obviously she's good at cross country. 3rd place last year, 28.46, amazing shape. I'm trying to see how much she won the Kenyan Trials by, but 3 seconds. I was wondering, like, I was going to see if she beat them by like a minute.
Well, that's the other thing, because there's another woman who we knew even less about. Like, at least Agnes Ngedich last year was 3rd at World Cross. Like, the woman who she beat the Kenyan Trials, Immaculate Anyango, has really come out of nowhere. She did run 30.01 on the roads last fall, but before that, her best performance on the track or roads was 32.51 for 10,000, 15.22 for 5,000. Suddenly she ran 28.57 in Valencia behind Ngedich, and now she's 2nd at the Kenyan Trials. So she's also on the team for World Cross. So between those two and Chebet, I expect Kenya to probably go 1-2-3 in this race. Safana Sam was initially entered, but then she decided to withdraw, said she wanted to recover more from the Tokyo Marathon. Yeah, I think it's Kenya 1-2-3, and my question is, what's the order?
Well, I'm going with 28.46 until proven otherwise. I'm kind of glad. I mean, it sucks for you that I was really kind of, well, I shouldn't say glad. I thought it was really cool that Hassan was going to be running this race. I'm like, this woman's insane. But once she pulled out, I was like, okay, that's actually, I'm criticizing other people for not going with her. I'm like, okay, that's actually smart. And I was wondering, like, You know, some people like Tiger Woods have like a sex addiction, supposedly. Like, do you think she has a race addiction? Like, I was like, this is a little bit insane for me to be running like World Cross like a month after a marathon. So I'm glad this to me proves that she's mentally sound. Going to get her body well for the Olympics.
No, I think a race addiction would be if she decided to run like another marathon the week after Tokyo or do like the Boston Marathon. We've seen plenty of people run World Cross a week after a marathon or to do it a few weeks after a marathon. They're not expecting to be at their best, but if there's someone who recovers fairly quickly, yeah, it's not crazy. I'm not criticizing Safwan Hassan for not running it. She did run a spring marathon earlier this month. If there's anyone who has earned the right to be selective with her race schedule, it's Safwan Hassan, who does like doubles and triples at all these major championships. But obviously, the meet would have been more fun if she was in there. You know, she makes pretty much every race more interesting. So, and she also hasn't run World Cross. I don't think she's run it ever. She's run very little cross country. She did run the 2013 European Cross Country Championships in Belgrade. I think she won the under 23 race there. But yeah, it would have been fun to see her do this because it's one of the few things she hasn't done in the sport. But I'm not ripping her for missing it.
All right, John, we've talked about the Kenyan women. I don't know if I was paying attention when you started. I mean, I guess it makes sense to lead with the Kenyan women because they've won the last, let me make sure, yes, 8 world cross country women's titles. Trivia. Okay, this is for you, John. Do not go to Wikipedia. Who is the last person not from Kenya to win world cross country? If you need a hint, I can give you a hint.
No, I don't think I need a hint. I'm going to logic this one out because my stat in the men's article was from the last 8 world cross countries, which have been 2009 through 2023. Therefore, the last one before that, which would have been the last non-Kenyan women's winner, would be 2008 in Edinburgh. I think I remember that one decently well. I think it was Tirunesh Dibaba won that race.
Jesus. I mean, I don't remember anything about that race. But you are correct. That's why we... Good job, folks. This isn't made up. This we could fake something like this, but this is John's photographic memory.
Well, I gave you the logic I used for it. That's how it was deductive reasoning.
John, most people's brains, particularly in the day and age of Wikipedia, they don't have it archived in their brain. Okay, 2008 World Cross was in Edinburgh, and of course Dibaba won that one. Like, yeah, like, I mean, I was at a lot of these races. I couldn't tell you. It'd be hard for me to tell you what year it was, who won, what alone.
Yeah, but you got to remember, I will go on the Wikipedia. I had not actually seen the women's winners list like this week. This wasn't like, oh, I just saw it right before the podcast. Like, I remember this from before, but I've probably been on like the World Cross Country Championships Wikipedia page more than most people, just because part of it's my job. Part of it, I'm kind of interested. It's one of my favorite events. So yeah, I'm at a little bit of an advantage there. But
anyways, with Ethiopia, it's a little disappointing to me that the 2-time world junior champion, Ledesanet Gede, who should have won last year, or almost won last year, is not running. What is she doing instead, John?
Yeah, I texted her agent, Valentine Trow. I just said, you know, why isn't she running it this year? And he told me she's focused on the track season. Maybe just because it's the Olympics that she wants to focus on it a bit more. Like, she ran World Cross last year and still ran a season on the track. She ran World Cross in 2019, still ran the track. So I don't know. It's kind of a bummer because she hasn't won the senior race. She likes running World Cross Country. You know, she won the junior race twice in 15 and 17. She ran the senior race in 19. She medaled. She ran the senior race in 2023, almost won. It'll be a cool redemption story. You know, she comes so close, she falls at the final hurdle in 2023. She's back for gold in 2024, but she's not doing that. She's focused on track, so she won't be there. And, you know, the Ethiopian team is obviously weaker without her. She's a huge talent. The best athlete, I would say, is the winner of their trials, who's Gumawit Gebrezahia. Sorry if I'm butchering her name. She's run 64:14 for the half marathon. So she's very good. I just don't think she's as good as Chebet or Ngedich or maybe even Anyango. So that's the top Ethiopian woman to watch.
I do think, you know, moving forward, moving the date up will help people because they won't have the excuse that it's interfering with their track season. Actually, in Tallahassee, it's like January 6, 2026, before we even have the indoor season.
January 10th, Robert. Yeah. I don't know if you have a particular predilection to January 6th, but yeah, January 10th. I'm wondering, they might even move that date up a little further. Like, I've heard they want to have it 2 weeks off the European Cross, maybe as a way to get more European athletes doing it. But I do think that'll be the proof is in the pudding, Robert. January 2026 in Tallahassee, if you still don't get these athletes showing up and running it, then you just, it's just, they're never going to come.
Yeah, but I think
if you
having
an American athlete doing it that year, they're never going to do it because there's no, like, they don't have any big race on the horizon. It's a non-championship year in 2026. That's just, if people don't show up then, it would just be saying they don't care about World Cross.
But I think they will show up, and I think they'll show up in numbers. It reminds me of the year they had the U.S. Cross in Boulder, and we'll link to this in the show notes. It was massive, like huge crowds. Everybody showed up. People just collectively decided, this is going to be a big one. We're going to go do this, you know, and it was amazing.
Well, my worry, though, Robert, is if they're having it in January 10th, 2026, the World Championships in 2025 are in the middle of September, and that's going to be the end of five World Championships in 5 years, five Worlds or Olympics in 5 years. I do wonder if you have some people just say, there's a Worlds in September, and then there's going to be a U.S. Trials probably in December for World Cross. They just don't, they'd rather recover from all the years of track championships. I wonder if you would see that happening. I feel like that's the one year, for, speaking from a biased American perspective, that having it in the traditional March date might actually drum up numbers because you'd have more people a little bit more recovered from Worlds.
You're right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
It's too close to Worlds. They don't have time to take a break and gear back up. So damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, I do think when they have it, they just need to put more money in it, which I know the money doesn't grow on trees, but if you had like a $200,000 first place, although we got the big names in the men's side. Anyways, you want to know how will Wayne Coatti do? But before we get to that, hopefully you're already a member of the Supporters Club. If you're not a member of the Supporters Club, join today. Let'srun.com/subscribe. You missed it on Friday's bonus podcast. We have a bonus podcast every week. I thought we had a great segment. I came up with the idea. Well, John Kelly came up with the idea. If one of the Ingebrigtsen brothers gets into the final, Olympic final, with Jakob, will they and should they sacrifice themselves for the little brother and rabbit the race? Fascinating discussion. But you missed it. If you're not a Supporters Club member, letsrun.com/subscribe today. We'd love to hear from you, whether you're a Supporters Club member or not. Give us a call. Unlike Facebook, unlike Twitter, we have a phone number, 844-LETS-RUN, 844-LETS-RUN. And do what I did this week. I need some shoes, running shoes. I don't know how this is possible, John. I guess I run so infrequently that I've lost every single pair of running shoes that I own.
Wait, hold on a second. Are you telling me the guy who runs and operates letsrun.com does not currently have a pair of running shoes in your house?
Correct. I don't know if I left them on a trip or what. I was trying to pack them in my backpack, but I don't know. I did go out to the garage last week because I could not find the trainers. And I went out to the garage and I randomly found the super shoes that the Supporters Club members sent me free. And I put those things on. I hadn't worn them in like a year and a half. I felt like a rocket was on my thing. So I did go to my indoor treadmill class and that. But then I must have left it at the office and misplaced it because I have no shoes. So I had to buy shoes. And what did I do? I didn't trust these reviews on Amazon or Nike. I didn't want to know what some fat house husband thought of a shoe. I wanted to know what a legit runner thought of the shoes. So I went to betterrunningshoes.com. Just, betterrunningshoes.com.
Wait, which one of those people are you closer to right now, Robert? A fat has-been husband or a legitimate runner?
I'm closer to the fat house husband, but I want to know what the legitimate runners think of the shoes. So I went to our shoe review site, betterrunningshoes.com, and checked out the reviews there. You should check it out today. Review your shoe there too. So I do have a new pair coming, but I can't run until they come, John. So I'm not going barefoot.
So your mileage count for the month of March is what?
For the month of March? It's kind of sad. It's the end of March. So we're a quarter of the year done? God, sub three is really hurting.
Almost.
I'm pretty sure I've run less than 20 miles the entire year. Because...
No, what I want to know is, have you run any miles? You said you went to an indoor treadmill class. Oh, yeah. I assume did a few miles on that.
That's 2.5 miles, and I've probably done that like 5 times this year. So that's like 12 and a half. And then I did my mile time trial on January 1st. I'm going to guess I'm like 15 miles for the year, maybe.
That's sad. We've got a lot of people who are in the listening to this and probably in the midst of a 15-mile run.
But and they're going to hate me all the more when I prove it's all about talent, baby. When I'm going sub 3 soon. Now, John, do the women still kiss you? I hate hilly courses, but I may have to run Boston, because what other option do I have to get like a teenage woman to kiss me? So, but it's like in the Boston Marathon, that's acceptable.
Have a daughter and wait 13 years.
That's like Tom Brady weird.
There are many appropriate ways to do this. Or maybe...
But when you run Boston, have you run it? They kiss you, right? When you go through the college, like it's expected?
They used to offer kisses at Wellesley at the halfway point. But I feel like COVID may have killed that tradition. Because I think the first marathon back, they said, no more kissing due to COVID. And I haven't run Boston recently, so I don't know whether that's still a thing, if they discourage it anymore. I don't know. But yeah, it used to be a thing. They would offer kisses at Wellesley College.
I'll have to have my wife park herself there, and then she can give me a kiss. I don't need a teenage woman.
Sounds lovely.
I just need a beautiful woman, not a teenage woman, to do that, John.
There we go. Robert has saved himself from a potentially tricky situation. All right, Wayne Kaladi, America's best hope. I told her coach, Stephen Haas, on Monday, I'm getting pretty excited about her chances, Robert. You know, I have the list of top American finishes. In the last 8 editions, there's only one American woman who has finished in the top 10 at World Cross Country. And do you know who that might be, Robert? Can you think?
Shalane Flanagan.
Not only does he nail it, he gets the pronunciation of her name right as well. Robert, that's correct. She was the bronze medalist 2011, Punta Umbria, Spain. And now Shalane Flanagan, all-time American great, had already won an Olympic medal at that point in her career. I don't think Wayne Kaladi is as good as her, so I don't think a medal is realistic. But I'm looking at what she's done recently. I mean, this is Wayne Kaladi. She went to World Cross last year, and she was 21st, but you know, she was coming off of injury. This year, she runs 66:25 in the half marathon at Houston. Debut half marathon, breaks the American record. 6 days later, she dominates the U.S. Cross Country Championships. And then on March 16th, she ran 30:33 at the 10. Easily gets under the Olympic standard of 30:40. She's upped her mileage. She's running longer long runs. She's running longer workouts. She's an NCAA cross country champion. She's a Foot Locker cross country champion. I think this is our best bet for a top 10 finisher by an American at World Cross for quite some time. So it'll take a good race from her to do it. She needs to make sure she's, you know, recovered from the 10. But I think she's got a pretty decent chance to get there. There's some good competition up front, obviously, but with a great race, I think she could. I don't think it's unrealistic to think she could be in the top 10.
Guys, welcome to the show.
Oh, Weldon has joined us. A little later than we expected, folks. It must not have gone well, John. I don't know if you know where he was. He was at the first parent-teacher conference for his daughter's preschool. Weldon, is there anything you need to be concerned with? Has your parenting been criticized?
No. Parenting's great. Get any tips, email me, Wejo@letsrun.com. Wejo@letsrun.com. Kids need to sleep. I'm a parent expert. But when I logged on here, my apologies. Guy showed up at the house. John Wimbley, maybe some audio difficulties, but anyway. And the first thing I hear is, I don't think Wayne Kaladi is as good as Shalane Flanagan. Something to those lines. What the hell are we talking about here, John? Please.
Okay. Well, all of the listeners will have heard the context of our conversation. I don't think they'll be confused. And they certainly didn't hear anyone saying the name Shalane Flanagan, because Robert actually pronounced it correctly. So good job messing that one up, Weldon. But I said Shalane Flanagan's the last American woman to finish in the top 10 at World Cross. That was 2011. we were debating, could Wayne Eikalaadi become the next one to do it for the reasons I outlined? And I said, I don't think she's good as Shalane, so she's not going to get third, which is what Shalane got. But I think she is good enough to get top 10. I'm just looking. So the 10th place of last year was Stella Chesang of Uganda, who finished 16th at World Cross Country, sorry, at Worlds on the track, who ran 68:28 in the half marathon and 2:20 in the marathon last year. That seems about what I think Wayne Eikalaadi is capable of. I was looking at another one, Emily Chibet, who is 9th, full World Cross champion, actually, who then served a doping suspension, came back. She ran 31:04 on the roads and 67:52 in the half marathon last spring, right after finishing 9th. So I think Eikalaadi, based on her personal bests, both of which she's run this spring, you know, she just ran 30:33 and 66:25. Based on that, that's a top 10 caliber athlete. The question is, can she put it together on the day of the race? It's also going to be warm, about 78, 79 degrees, I think. The race is in the middle of the day. And what Stephen Haas pointed out to me, her coach, she's been training in Flagstaff the whole winter. You know, she hasn't really been doing any warm weather stuff. He's like, she's not a bad warm weather runner. It's going to be a change in conditions for her. So that's one thing to sort of factor in. But yeah, I think she's got a shot. Did I make the case there well enough, Weldon?
I guess so. Maybe it's a testament to the depth of the U.S. running that somebody who's never been top three at a USA's, she has won a road 5K, that's all, and maybe a few other road championships. We're talking about her getting top 10 at World Cross, but some of that also, a lack of a kick isn't going to get you penalized at World Cross too much, and it's really about the depth of the other teams after Kenya and Ethiopia, most likely. So there is a big difference between 10th and 3rd. So I think that's a good goal for her, top 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be easy. Kenya could easily go sweep the top 5, and then you've only got 5 places left, and a few of them are going to go to Ethiopians. So, she can finish 10th and run a great race for her. But I do think it's something worth shooting for, and I think she'll go out and run with the leaders. So I'm looking forward to see how she does. And you say she hasn't been top 3 at USA's on the track. Okay, that is true. But, you know, she was 4th in the 10K last year. She was 4th in the 5K the year before that. She's been close to making teams. She just has gotten beat.
Well, now 4th equals 3rd? I mean, I said she hasn't been top 3. And John's like, that's true, but she's been 4th
twice. No, I just want to point out that you're acting like she's not a threat at all on the track. Like, she could very easily finish in the top 3 at the trials this year. But yes, you are correct. She hasn't been making U.S. teams. I just wanted to provide the context.
I mean, it's clear the quality of the podcast, the clients, you guys get time. I'm coming in fresh, making good points, striking quick.
The first thing you did when you came on the show was mispronounce the name of one of the greatest runners in the history of the United States.
I said Shalane Flanagan. I never said how does Robert say it?
Shalane? You run the tape. You read it. You're not allowed. Robert Weldon is the one who does the editing for this podcast. He produces it. And maybe he's just going to delete this segment right here. But he has the power to remove this stuff, remove the audio, to make it sound however he wants. I just hope he holds himself accountable when he realizes he made his mistake.
I'm a man of my word. I will keep the audio pure.
I swear to God, I don't even know what y'all are talking about when we're mispronouncing her name. I've never understood. I don't hear it. So I got lucky if I said it right, because I have no idea. I say it the same. I try to say it the same every time. All right.
Well, I'll explain it to you, Robert. When you shape your lips into certain shapes and push air through it, it will lead to different sounds. And some of those sounds are correct, like they represent words we're trying to say that have meaning. And other of those sounds don't represent anything and are just made up. And sometimes you just use these made up sounds when you actually are trying to use the correct sounds.
John's very respectful of people's pronouns, all this other stuff, but people who might have a speech impediment, oh no, they can't pronounce words just how he does. No sympathy. It's very sad.
Do you guys have speech impediments? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I went to speech class in first grade because I said wake instead of lake.
Doesn't sound like a yes to me. I'm an understanding of accents and speech impediments, but this is an easy fix, which I know you guys can say it correctly because you've done it on this show. I just want to make sure we do it every time.
Okay, big picture though. We discussed the key topics. First of all, the Baltimore bridge collapse, Robert.
Yes, we've talked about it.
Sympathies, Baltimore. That thing was crazy. Has Schumacher been canned? And let's see here. My girlfriend is objectively a good partner, but I don't feel like I want to marry her combined lives. Have we discussed
these things? Well, I read that thread. I thought it was fascinating. I mean, this is, you know, sometimes you come to Let's Run for hardcore running analysis, and sometimes you come for it for like major life decisions. This guy's been in a serious relationship. I don't know. Do you guys have a, I'd talk about that at the end of the show if you guys wanted to, but I don't know if you had an opinion on that or not. I kind of do.
I haven't read the thread, but it's the type of friend I love on Let's Run. I love forums. I love going on a run, talking about stuff with runners, and I like doing that online on letsrun.com.
Okay, enough more cross-country talk. We can talk about whether Jiri Schumacher has been fired. No, he has not been fired. He actually raced his guys. Jiri Schumacher, former Wisconsin coach, former and current Bowman Tri Cup coach, in case you don't know, has gotten back into the college coaching game and is now the Oregon head coach, director of track and field there. He's been there about a year and a half. And the men's results have been underwhelming, to say the least. But
did you just say, in case you don't know, do you think there are people who are listening to this show who don't know Jiri Schumacher is the head coach at the University of Oregon?
Yeah, people from overseas and stuff may not follow the college scene. And it's kind of interesting because people ask me all the time, do you miss coaching? And I was like, I miss the kids. It's fun to work with talented 20-year-olds. But I don't miss the lifestyle and the recruiting. And I always thought, if I ever got back into it, being a pro coach is so much easier. You don't have to show up to watch them run easy if you don't want to. You can send them to a meet on their own. But now he's doing both. And the coaching threads on Let's Run, the message board, are always the worst. People just, every coach sucks because there's a lot of jealous coaches out there. But I mean, I did tell John, I'm like, even I view myself as a jury defender. I'm like, the results have not been impressive, but they pretty much are starting anew, right? They got rid of they have a lot of young guys. And this is his first recruiting class. So he got hired in the summer of 2022. So not really time to recruit. So his best guys are all freshmen. And the best of those lot, Simeon Birnbaum, finally wore the Oregon singlet for the first time this weekend. He ran 3:37 for 1500 last year and did not run that this weekend. He ran 3:45, got absolutely destroyed by Elliott Cook, beat him by like almost 3 seconds in the final 200 meters. So Cook wins in 3:42. Birnbaum runs 3:45. And I thought it was interesting. I found the Chris Hansen article in the Eugene Register Guard. And one, Cook said, I had to convince Jerry to let me run this race. And two, Birnbaum said, you know, I really wanted to be racing. Now, it sounds like he's been hurt in the winter. People have been looking to Strava and stuff. But I don't think the intention for people have been ripping Jerry. I don't think the intention for Jerry was to necessarily redshirt Simeon Ben Birnbaum. Like, I think in the fall, he was dinged up and that carried over to the winter. And now he's not dinged up and he's racing him. I think Jerry's smart enough to realize if this guy's as good as we think he's going to be, he's not going to be hanging around for a fifth year anyways. That would be 2028. And most likely, he's already gone pro by then. Now, NIL could change that. If you get crazy money, maybe you stay. But I used to say this back in the day when Chesnok was staying. I'm like, is Nike paying him underneath the table? So maybe, you know, what if Nike only gives NIL money to Oregon Ducks to stay at the track team and just dominate? But anyways, I thought it was good that he was racing. There was a thread that's saying it was a disaster. And I was like, what's a disaster and what's embarrassing is someone starting this thread? This is one of America's top talents. He's finally healthy enough to be racing. And he said, it wasn't good, but often my first race of the season is terrible. So we'll see in a week or two when he races again, how is he doing? But I thought this was an encouraging sign. And in the article, John, now this may have been much because the Oregon men didn't even make cross country, but I threw it out there. could they possibly podium at NCAA cross country in the near future? And the stat I came up with is if you put five guys in the top 100, you normally podium, but you need a few low sticks. And they've got like five freshmen under 802 or better. So all those guys should be top 100 next year. Birnbaum gets 20th, and they're good to go.
Yeah, I think you're getting a little carried away there. You say just 802 doesn't mean you're going to be top 100 in the NCAA anymore. It's just the talent's too good. Now, Isaiah Sturry, I'm kind of surprised he came in. He was the top freshman in NCAAs in 2022. He kind of took a step backwards this year. I don't think they're going to be top five this season. I wouldn't be surprised if they're top five within a year or two, because I do think Jerry Schumacher is a good coach. He had a long history of success in cross country at Wisconsin. They were contending for national titles year in, year out. So yeah, I think once he's got a system in place in a couple of years, I wouldn't be surprised. This year, no, I think it's too competitive, and the stats you put out, and just like, okay, they've got five guys who've run between 756 and 802, but if your top guy is a 756 guy at NCAA cross, where is that going to be, Robert? That's like might be in the 70s or something.
Well,
like,
you need worse than
top
that.
Five on the podium.
I just threw it out there kind of, I like to play devil's advocate. Look, 100 guys broke 758 this year. 200 guys broke 803. That's crazy. It's just a total bell curve. So this reminds me of the conference meet. I used to always say, when my gun goes off at the Ivy League championships, there's like 50 guys that think they're going to be top 20, because on a perfect day, they could be top 20. But most of them aren't going to do it. And the same thing here. If you're an 8-minute guy, yeah, you could finish top 100, but most likely you're not. And Oregon didn't have anyone in the top 100 this year. But the main point was, none of those guys are their top guys. The thing that concerns me for them in cross country is it seems to me that most of their guys are more track oriented than cross country runners. It's not like Simeon Birnbaum was the world's best high school cross country runner.
No, I think he was like top five at Foot Locker as a senior, which is all right, but you know, he's better on the track. It is fascinating though, Robert, like Jerry Schumacher is just one of those topics that people have a lot of strong opinions on for Let's Run. Like, where else, after a meet on March 23rd, like the first meet of the outdoor season, would you have, you know, he gets a freshman who doesn't run well in his first race back from injury, and then there's a thread started on Let's Run saying Jerry Schumacher deserves to be fired. It's just such an overreaction to, I know, again, his first year and a half on the men's side at Oregon hasn't been all that great, but this is, you know, this is not the race to overreact to. It's a race in March. Like, I found the comments about Elliott Cook interesting. He had to convince Jerry to race. But at the same time, it's like, how many athletes are really running on March 23rd anyway? Like, most of the top athletes are coming off NCAA indoors. I know Elliott Cook wasn't. But I was glad to see that Birnbaum raced. I'm glad he's running at Stanford this upcoming weekend. 3:45. I mean, Birnbaum himself said he sucked in that race. He wasn't happy with the performance. And I understand why he wouldn't, because he's a 3:37 guy. But give him some time. Get the training under his legs. Get healthy again. I think he'll be a lot better in a couple months than he is on March 23rd. And I don't think it's something people need to be overreacting to.
Of course, the getting fired thing's an overreaction, but it's like sports talk radio. People are going to go there. At the same time, I mean, Jerry's got a good and got a bad. He gets more leeway because I assume Phil Knight has his back. You don't get hired at Oregon without that. So most coaches are going to get 2 years to sort of do whatever they want. They're going to probably have to push forward for immediate results. That's not the case for Jerry at Oregon. But speaking of Phil Knight, NIL has been mentioned. What would stop Phil Knight from saying, like, I guess, well, maybe $10 million would be a lot, but like, oh, here's $2 million every year for Oregon track NIL. Let's go. I mean, NIL is going to radically change all these sports. It may really crush some of these non-revenue sports. But the money's going to start going to the athletes in the major sports. Have you guys seen there's some NCAA basketball tournament next year? They're just going to start, the networks essentially are going to pay the athletes to show up. So soon teams aren't going to want to go play someone unless they're going to get paid. Well, that means less money for the administrators, less money for the programs, more directly to the athletes. Long term, I think NIL might rule the roost for some of these non-revenue sports, because essentially now they're taking money that would have gone, that's not, can't go to the basketball players. Well, now more of that money is directly going to go to the players.
Why do the TV networks want to pay the players even more than they're already paying the NCAA? That's just stupid. Like, the whole college thing's disgusting to me, but I got to head out. But I'll say one thing. I was told that, yes, Phil Knight could give Nike just a bunch of NIL money, then Oregon could have three times the scholarships as everybody else, and they would dominate. I was told that basically Jerry Schumacher told him, hey, I don't want to do that. And Phil's like, yeah, that's fine. You know, I don't want to basically buy you a title either, but we're not going to get left behind. So if other people start paying, he's going to pony up to pay to stay equal. So that makes sense to me. But it just, you know, it's already changing things greatly. I've been talking to some, there's a number of ACC programs that their budget is less now, significantly less now than it was 10 years ago. And they can't compete with the SEC. And one coach told me, like, look, just in the last 10 years, they've gotten $200 million more dollars in TV money than we have, than our school has. So figure it out. It's $20 million a year you're missing. So they can splash a million or two extra to the Florida track program every year that these ACC schools don't get. And then it adds up a lot over 10 years. If you're $20 million behind them.
Yeah, the landscape's shifting. What I'm concerned about is it could shift even more. Like, right now you've got NIL money. What if schools are just openly allowed to pay players? If that starts happening in the major conferences, it could cripple everything outside of football and basketball. And then you're wondering, what does the NCAA track as a sport look like at all? How many programs even have players, have athletes? So maybe that's getting a little ahead of ourselves, but things are changing. I think they're not done changing at the NCAA level.
Correct. And Robert poo-pooed this TV thing, but essentially it's an outside group. They're starting a tournament. They want the top teams to come. So they're like, we'll pay you and we'll give NIL to the athletes. So essentially that's paying the players. So some of the money, even if it's not direct payments, more of the money is going to go to the athletes. And the question is, look, 30 years ago, Oregon had a track program. They felt like it was important to have a track program on its own right, right? I don't think the football program was like making ridiculous amounts of money and floating everything. It's like, no, it was sort of a matter of fairness or something, right? Like, we're going to fund these sports. Some of them don't make money, some don't. Well, Oregon might be the one exception. So like, say University of Texas or something that gets no fans. But the question is, in 2024, when college sports are being more and more to be made about the dollar, saying that you really can't have rules in place, would an SEC school, I mean, maybe they would, because they have some money left over, want to have a track program if that's going to mean funding it not from the riches of basketball or soccer, I mean, excuse me, or football, if you know. But lots of schools do that now. The Ivy League does that. I mean, that's the obvious example. But, you know, Southwest Louisiana State or something, I don't think they're probably showing a ton of profit from a football program, yet they still have a track program. I don't even know that's a real school, but, you know, a school, some schools essentially never
feel like up. There's a Southeast Louisiana State. I'm not sure if there's a Southwest Louisiana State, but it is, yeah. And that's something we have to see what it's going to look like a few years from now, because, you know, in track and field, the NCAA is pretty important. It is only, you know, the single best talent development pipeline for the entire world is the NCAA system. So a lot of people, not just obviously the United States, is going to lose development pipeline there, but a lot of other countries would as well. So we'll see. Speaking of all this NIL stuff, Nico Young finally announced he's got an NIL with Adidas. He went Instagram official. And I was just kind of wondering, like, what took them so long? Because he also said to the Ventura County Star newspaper, this is going to be his last year at NAU. And I took that to mean, you know, this upcoming track season will be his last year. And you would think, you know, if he wanted to get an NIL, you would capitalize on it beforehand. It's not like Nico Young was not a big name before he won these NCAA titles. He's taken a leap, but this guy's been a star since he was in high school. I would have thought he would have been one of the first people to sign an NIL deal. His teammate Drew Bosley signed one before Nico did. So His brothers, Lex and Leo, signed one before Nico. So Nico Young can do whatever the hell he wants. I'm sure he's going to make plenty of money on his pro contract he's about to sign. I'm just kind of curious. It's kind of interesting that he would wait this long to sign one. Or maybe, it sounded like Robert told us, Robert suspected that he had one for a while with Adidas, but hadn't announced it. And if that's the case, then I've got questions about that too, because what's the point? What value is Adidas getting if they're not actually being able to promote him as an Adidas athlete? Maybe it's gaining the right of first refusal on a future pro deal. So there could be some benefit. But do you find the timing of this at all odd? What do you make of Nico Young's Adidas NIL?
First of all, good for him.
Oh yeah, congrats, obviously. Yeah.
Second of all, I think he already had it. I mean, John, or the NIL, if it's going to be your last year, essentially it's just like an option to like, look, we've got you. Until I see someone sign one and then signed it with a different program, it's like, look, we're going to pay you this much this year. It's probably all even worked out, even though technically it's not supposed to be. What the deal is down in the future, I don't know legally how these works. If someone does, please email me. But I assume Adidas is making at least a 4-year commitment to Nico. So whether they get an extra 2 months out of it, nobody really cares. So I think we'll announce it at the appropriate time. Now, maybe you could argue, oh, you could announce it right after NCAAs or something like that. But maybe they hadn't dotted the I's and crossed the T's. But I don't know. If you asked me 3 months ago, I would have kind of said, oh, Nico's at NAU. It's Adidas school. Somehow he's going to do it. NIL with Adidas. That's probably too simplistic, but...
It's an interesting interpretation. So you view it as sort of like a signing bonus slash down payment for when he inevitably signs with Adidas coming out of college. Because the rules, let's just be clear here, officially, the NILs expire once you declare your collegiate eligibility is over. So he would have to sign a new, official pro contract. But, with the way these shoe deals work, it wouldn't be shocking to me if he met with the people at Adidas, he's got a good feeling with them, and there's kind of a, implicit understanding that there might be, a big contract waiting for him once his eligibility's up.
Can we cut the bullshit, right? NIL is a sham. We've noticed that, maybe not the endorsement part, but like boosters are just using it to pay athletes, essentially. So, but the other part is like, wait, you're supposed to only sign an endorsement while they're in college. You can't do the future thing. If we're going to let athletes monetize themselves, why can't they sign a 10-year deal when they're 18 years old with Nike? Like, well, let's cut the bullshit, because I assume that's what these companies essentially want to do. So like, and the rules are essentially being changed on the fly all the time. So either that, or you're going to need a few athletes to start essentially screwing over these companies. What, John, I think there were some guy who like went to one school, transferred right back, and there's some speculation that he might have taken a cash payment and then immediately gone back. I mean, if that starts happening a couple times, then maybe more of the companies will be like, look, hey, your deal's up, I'm sorry. So, but then that would just push for them to actually let an athlete have a 5-year deal, 6-year deal. I just don't see the point if they're clinging, and I was totally fine with the old rules, but this whole pay-to-play bullshit, boosters just directly funneling cash to athletes. I mean, it's crazy, right? 3 years ago, people were like, oh, that's nuts. And now everyone's like, why not? Why not pay the athletes? Well, I mean, God, the SMU football boosters, may they rest in peace, man. They were just ahead of their time.
Well, no, it is crazy how things have shifted, but I've always thought the name, image, and likeness thing was a no-brainer. Like, the idea that an athlete couldn't profit off their own autographs or couldn't sign some sort of endorsement contract or appear in TV commercials and that would impact their eligibility, like, come on, man. It's anti-American right there. You can't profit off your own self-worth. So, anyway, yeah, the rules might be changing. And, yeah, my prediction would be when Nico Young finishes up this spring, he'll be signing a pro deal with Adidas as well, but right now he's just officially NIL. They've got him for the spring.
But it's sort of interesting though, right? It's not like there's like guys who are like fans of the Dallas Mavericks who like secretly pay players, you know, like on the side, like you think you could, but I guess the players make so much money. They're like, well, I'll come to your car dealership once. Screw you. It's weird. It's people have it for the pros, but this allegiance thing is in a different thing. But like, I think there are some boosters every single year who would just give money to the top athlete on the team because they like see them perform. Now, maybe I guess it's really, maybe even with the Phil Knight caveat, only to the extent of like, I just want to stay competitive. I'm not going to go crazy on my own because at some point they're like, wait, I'm sort of wasting my money. These guys don't really need to make $5 billion to play college football of my own money. But if, you know, Michigan's going to beat us every year, okay, well, it's worth some money.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really a booster. I guess I give my annual donation to Dartmouth Track and Field. So, but I'm giving to the program. I don't think there's any NIL money involved. That's sort of to make sure athletes can go on their spring trip or whatever, which has, you know, that sort of thing.
I may or may not have said that I think now, if I see how this thing works after watching the Yale Bulldogs make a great run in the tournament, well, for the first game at least. I said, this Matt Wolf guy, I think he will be an NBA player. I said it right there. I was like, how much money could this kid get to go somewhere else? And then I'm like, wait, instead of donating money to the school for whatever, the school has billions of dollars they don't know what to do with, and I think it's using many ways a poor way, I'd rather make sure we had a good basketball team. I see how that works in some sense. Not, don't come knock on my door and make me write a check, but I contemplated it because I was like, this is great, man. I don't want to lose these players. If some other school started paying them, I'm like, oh, we would need to figure out a way to be competitive.
Right. Like, well, are you going to brag to your friends about having the biggest science building in the Ivy League? Or are you going to brag about having the best basketball team? You know, that's some of the alums, they, you know, if they want to still feel connected to their school and they want something they can take pride in, it's, a lot of them, it's going to be sports more than academics, that sort of thing, which I understand the thinking. All right. Let's go to the high school level. I'm going to call this the WTF performance of the week because I saw this. It popped up on my social media feed this week, and I'm like, this can't possibly be true. I don't understand how this is possible. The Atascocita, Texas high school team, Torrey Blaylock, Landon Fontenot, Jordan Parker, and Jelani Watkins broke the national record in the 4x100-meter relay. The following things made this absolutely insane. One, the previous record had stood since 1998. Two, they broke the record by almost a full second. The previous record was 39.76. They ran 38.92. So, my mind's still kind of blown by this. It was an incredible performance. Their anchor, Jelani Watkins, looks to be a future star. He's already run 10.22 this year. And, oh yeah, second place, Duncanville, Texas, also broke the old record and ran 39.65. So it was interesting reading a little bit about this. The Atascocita coach sounded like this has been a record they've been chasing this year. They thought they could get it, but my mind was blown. Well, then they could break the record by this much. And also that the top 11 teams in the all-time list in the boys 4x1 at the high school level are all from Texas. So I'm talking to you, who used to live in Fort Worth, which is the home of the former record holders, the Fort Worth Wyatt team from 1998. Can you make sense of this? Why is Texas so good at the 4x1, and how the hell did they break the record by so much?
Everything's bigger and better in Texas, John. First of all, it's Odie Wyatt. If you're, I don't know who Odie Wyatt was. You don't say Wyatt, you say Odie Wyatt. Duncanville, just in the same area, essentially, just south of Dallas, where Odie Wyatt in Texas sprinting. But like, why is sprinting so much better, at least 4x1 in Texas than California? I want an explanation. Besides, someone in Texas has to give me this explanation. Texans, we just know we're better and better, bigger and better than everything. But like, someone outside of Texas, tell me, sure, the weather's good, but there's warm places in California.
Well, Florida. Like, these are all large, populous states with a lot of talent. So I guess do they just have more meets? Are there more relay meets? Like, are they running more races this time of year? Are they running the 4x1 more often? Because California is more populous and has good weather, and Florida is very populous and has good weather. So it doesn't make sense that they're all from Texas. Anyway, it was a cool video. I can't profess to know that much about high school 4x1s, so I don't know if there's much to analyze, but congrats to the guys for breaking the record, for smashing the record. The baton passes were good. You know, I was wondering, I'm like, how would these guys stack up at the Olympics? It's like, okay, they would get lost in like the world championship final, but they're also, this is four high school kids against, you know, four professional athletes. So yeah, it was really impressive. I don't know what else to say.
I mean, the second place team, that was the Duncanville, right?
Yep.
They got crushed. They broke the old record.
It was nice to have the visual aid, though, like saying, you know, you can say, oh, they crushed the old record. But if you watch the video, you basically just had the other team, second place Duncanville, was 0.02 behind the old record. You can just see what it looks like. Like, here's what the best performance ever was beforehand, and here's what it is now. So it was very interesting to see that. All right. Before we go, shall we dive into this message board thread? I am fascinated by it. I don't want to say my life advice, like, people need to be taking this 100%, but at the same time, I found it very interesting. The thread started by Mac J. My girlfriend is an objectively good partner, but I don't feel like I want to marry her or combine lives. He's been saying he's been together with this woman for a year. Objectively great partner in person, no drama, emotionally stable, makes sound financial decisions, values health and wellness, has an internal locus of control, no major conflict. While we've been together, when there are things that need to be hashed out, we've been able to discuss them very maturely. All that being said, I'm having a very tough time seeing myself marrying this woman or us combining lives. I don't really understand why exactly either, but it's just very hard for me to envision. If I'm being honest, I feel like I don't want those things with her. I like her, but I also don't feel like I have a passion for her. I've had relationships in the past where I did feel those things, and that the woman I was with in those relationships gave me tremendous inspiration and motivation. Like, I felt this jolt of energy to conquer the world for the woman I was with. I don't really feel that at all for my current girlfriend, even though I can recognize intellectually she's a good partner. He's saying, what do we do? You know, they've talked about their future. Where does he go from here? Weldon, put yourself in this guy's shoes. What would you do?
I was trying to find his age or something. I think it's easy. He doesn't want to marry her, combined lives. You don't. So I guess that should mean you should break up with her. I just scanned the thread. He has said he's felt that way about other people. I think that's an easy decision. It's got to feel right. I think he sort of understands, like, there's not like some perfect person you marry and you have a perfect life or something like that. He's like, look, I like this person, but he's like, I think his instinct is telling him something. So I guess that would really mean, though, cut bait, man. Get back out there.
Yeah.
Find somebody else who you do want to spend with, because that sounds like that's, you know, his goal. And
there's a poster, Greg Oden Jogs says, puts it succinctly, dude, shit or get off the pot. You're stealing this girl's youth or what is left of it. Go find what makes you happy at the risk you may never find anything. Be a man. So I kind of feel, I think I agree with you, Weldon. Like, if you've been together with this person for a year and you don't really want to be with them long term, which is kind of what it sounds like, I think you owe it to both of you guys in that relationship to move on. And it's unfortunate to lose something that's nice, but, you know, if you don't see this person, someone you're going to be with for the rest of your life, I don't know what ages these people are at, but you don't get that much time to find someone, you know? So, yeah, I feel like you got to move on, even though you are taking a risk that you're not going to find something better than what you have. But it doesn't sound like what he has right now is what he wants permanently. So I feel like you got to break up.
There's another post drawn here who says, my girlfriend had just pulled to the McDonald's drive-thru and they said that as much as I do want a family and kids, I don't want it with her. She started sobbing inconsolably, wanted to go home immediately, but was stuck in the line.
I saw that post too. Well, that's devastating. I guess that's why you do these things in person, or should try to, because you don't want someone to be just doing it over the phone and they're in a McDonald's drive-thru and you're probably going to ruin their day no matter what, but I feel like you owe it to have that conversation in person.
Oh, I assumed he was in the car with her.
Well, you would have that? Then, all right, don't have the conversation in a McDonald's drive-thru, buddy, if that's the case.
I mean, if people want to criticize the Let's Run poster, I can see, you know, you're nervous, you're like, screw it, we're stuck. I'll just bring it out now. Really bad timing. But on the phone while she's at McDonald's, who knows? But the point being, even that guy, like, oh, I want to have a kid. You're a good person, but for whatever reason, you don't click for me. I don't even think this one's that difficult. I don't know. I guess I remember, you know, being single. And a friend of my dad's was like, what are you waiting for, man? Get the deal done. And I said at the time, thought that was crazy. But now that I'm married, I sort of see it. Like, I sort of do, you know, but like, there is a timing to things. Oh, we got to be dating so long, that sort of stuff that I think most people sort of go through. But if you know the end result isn't there, then I think what's the point of continuing the relationship?
Right.
It sounds like this guy knows that.
I think he knows deep down, and maybe he's just looking for confirmation. But at the same time, there is this risk, Weldon, that you dump this woman, and then 5 years from now, you're not in any better situation. You're actually saying, damn it, I didn't realize how good I had it with this person. And that's the risk in this situation. But I think you probably have to take that risk if it's not what you ultimately want.
We've had other posters. They're ready to take her once he breaks up with her. So we're starting a marketplace for this, you know. But John, we are the king of relationships. Did you guys plug the supporters club at all today? The email here?
We plugged it earlier. I mean, you can never plug it enough, but we talked about our discussion on the podcast, the Friday 15 last week, about what would you do if you're Philip or Henrik Ingebrigtsen, you make the Olympic final. Would you sacrifice your chances to help pace Jakob to the title? So that was the most exciting part of the podcast last week. But if you want to plug it again, go. I mean, I should plug it right now. We're going to have a Friday 15 from Belgrade on Friday. I'll have gone to the course, have the press conference, be able to give you the inside scoop on what's going on. Don't know if we'll be doing that live or not. We'll have to figure it out. But you're going to want to sign up for that. Maybe, do we do a post-race show on Saturday afterwards? We might have one of those as well. Don't want to guarantee anything, but you want the Friday 15 every week because it gives you the preview, you know, it gives you the insight that you're not going to get anywhere else. So, well, what's your plug for it? Go ahead. Let'srun.com/subscribe, by the way, to sign up.
Yeah. Where else are you going to get coverage of World Cross Country live or from the course, what have you? And if the race is Saturday, great. I haven't told you, I'm on vacation next week, so leaving Sunday. But yeah, we got an email here. Dear Robert, John, and Weldon, this is Supporters Club member Kempin in 92. Oh, this guy's got to be my era. Just wanted to let you guys know how much I enjoy the podcast. Great commentary and insight by all of you. I look forward to listening every Tuesday and Friday. My wife, despite having zero interest in running, is even amused by the dynamic between Robert and John. Anyway, just want to give some positive feedback after you mentioned some criticism on the message board. It's great every time. Keep up the good work. P.S. Just got a couple of the t-shirts. They live up to the hype. Sincerely, I don't know if people want their names read. JR. We'll just say JR. So, John, I would love to know that, like, pretty sure I couldn't get my wife to listen to some random podcast about stuff she's not interested in. But you hear about families that listen, and they're really interested in the dynamic between Robert and John. It's just a...
Well, I'm just going to say this. I only know of one family that would listen to this in the car on summer road trips with their kids growing up. And that kid turned into a world championship finalist last year at age 18, Niels Laros. So maybe there are other families who do it, but as far as I know, the success rate is 100% for producing world championship finalists. So yeah, give it a listen. Maybe share it with your family. It's not for everyone. We welcome all criticism, and I love the support. I love hearing the positive messages, but I don't mind if you guys got complaints or things you think we can improve. I'm always welcome to that. But the one request I would ask for you guys is, if you're still listening right now, go ahead and give it a rating and review on whatever podcast network you're listening to, podcast player. We want to spread the word. We want to keep it growing. So 5 stars, any sort of comment you want to add on Apple, Spotify, however you can do that, we appreciate it. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Check back later in the week. We'll have a report from Serbia. World Cross Countries this weekend, one of the best races of the year. Can't wait for it. Look forward to writing, talking all about it. Until then.